In just a moment, we're going to talk to Raina McIntyre. She is someone you've probably seen or heard quite a lot of over the last couple of months. She's a professor of global biosecurity at the University of New South Wales in epidemiology, infectious diseases, pandemics. These are all her areas of expertise, and she will be joining us in just a moment to share her expert insights. And in fact, you might have a question for Raina McIntyre, in which case you should give us a call on 1300 65 9994.
You're listening to Angela Coutures.
And it's time for a national wrap of information all about COVID-19. So first, let's go to the Northern Territory. That sounds like an absolutely fine idea. And the Northern Territory has the least restrictions of all. You can attend the following as long as you don't spend more than 2 hours in them: indoor markets, gymnasiums, cafes and restaurants, pubs, as long as they serve food, libraries, playgrounds, places of worship, galleries, museums, beauty salons, fitness studios, and all parks and reserves are now open in the Northern Territory. In Western Australia, from Monday the 18th, you are allowed to have indoor and outdoor non-work gatherings of up to 10 people. This includes things like picnics, dinners, fishing, boating, hiking and camping. Cafes, restaurants and pubs with meal service are allowed for up to 20 patrons. Non-contact community sports are allowed for up to 20 people. Outdoor or indoor fitness classes of up to 20 people also allowed in WA. Public pools will be permitted to open under strict rules and with up to 20 swimmers per pool. Places of worship, community facilities and libraries will be permitted to reopen with up to 20 patrons. That's in WA. Elsewhere, and that is South Australia, Queensland, New South Wales, the ACT, Victoria and Tasmania, groups of up to 5 visitors are allowed at a person's home and 10 people are allowed to meet in public. Outdoor gatherings are permitted of up to 10 people. This includes outdoor recreational and exercise activities. For weddings, 10 guests are allowed, plus the couple and the celebrant. For funerals, 20 guests are allowed at an indoor ceremony and 30 people at an outdoor ceremony. Religious gatherings and ceremonies will be permitted with up to 10 guests. Rules around cafes, pubs and restaurants in these states differ. So if you want any more specific information, you should call the Older Persons COVID-19 support line. And that number is 1-800-171-866. That's 1-800-171-866. And so while restrictions are being eased around the country, you are still advised to stay home as much as possible. Nationally, no matter where you live in Australia or whatever you're doing, you still need to maintain 1.5 metres of physical distancing, good hand hygiene, responsible respiratory hygiene as well. Anyone feeling unwell should get tested and remain at home. And just with regard to borders, international travel will remain off limits for the foreseeable future, but for domestic travel, South Australia and the Northern Territory borders are open, but all people arriving in those states are required to undertake a 14-day quarantine. In Queensland, borders remain closed and there will be 14 days isolation for returning residents. Tasmania, the border is closed and also 14 days ISO for returning residents. New South Wales, Victoria and the ACT have no border restrictions. Western Australia, the state border remains closed, but the internal borders have been relaxed and the 9 internal regions have now been reduced to 4. And with regard to schools, they differ around Australia. In some states, they're fully open now, while in other states, the return to school will be staggered. The best thing to do, if you need to know, is to call the COVID hotline in your state. All aged care facilities in Australia still have restrictions, so to find out what they are, you'll probably need to call the individual facility ahead of your visit if you are unsure. Again, if you need more information, call the Older Persons COVID-19 Support Line. That's 1-800-171-866. It's a free call and it is especially for older Australians, their friends, family and carers.
Getting on. Internet-free coronavirus information on ABC Radio.
Well, Professor Raina McIntyre is someone you've probably seen or heard of a lot over the last couple of months. She is the head of the biosecurity program at the Kirby Institute, and I'm thrilled to say she joins us now on ABC Radio. Raina, hello and welcome.
Good evening, Angela.
Very nice to talk to you. So around the country, Australians are beginning to emerge from their homes in different stages, according to where we all are. What do you think of the easing of restrictions? Have we got them right so far?
Look, I think, a staged, careful approach, as is happening in Australia, is a good thing. Obviously, with more mixing of people, there will be an increased risk of an uptick in cases, but we have had expanded testing. So as long as any new cases that arise get tested quickly and identified, we should be able to still keep things under control.
You have been pretty much spot on with your analysis and recommendations thus far. I think you must have been one of the first people to officially go into lockdown, were you?
I'm not sure about that. I didn't find out when other people did, but...
No, I know, but I think you were just very cautious very early on, weren't you?
I was, that's because I live with people who are at high risk for the complications, and I myself have some risk factors, so including age. So, that was what my decision was based on.
Well, and so how should older Australians or those with, compromised immune systems respond to the easing of restrictions around the country?
Well, I think they need to manage each situation with a sort of risk analysis approach. So, having people over to the house, I would be cautious about that, have fewer people over and, not have large crowds of people. If there's young people in the house who are coming and going, probably maintaining some spatial distance in the household is a good thing. And if you have to go out, try to avoid very crowded places. If you can get your groceries delivered online, that's probably a better option. And if you've got to go to the hospital or the doctor's surgery for a medical appointment, many of those places are already asking patients coming in to wear a mask, but in those kind of settings it might be a good idea, even though it's not an official recommendation.
No, it's not, is it? We see everybody wearing masks overseas. Not that it hasn't really been one of the measures we've been encouraged to take in Australia. Why not?
Well, I think, there was a concern about shortages for healthcare workers. Uh-huh. But that's, I think the government's procured quite a lot of masks and respirators for healthcare workers, so the shortage issue isn't so great. We've now got a couple of domestic manufacturers making masks and respirators. We've also got a very low incidence of disease, so it's not like walking around the streets of New York or London, where there is a lot of infection. The risk is much, much lower in Australia. So I guess all those considerations have come into play. But people can still make their own individual decisions based on their own risk factors and what they need to do.
Mm. And so, Raina, the vexed question of grandparents and grandchildren, I guess if kids are allowed to go back to school, should they be okay to visit their grandparents?
I think, again, keeping that spatial separation, the physical distancing, is an important thing. People will make their own decisions and their own judgments, I guess, but if you're older, then, really anyone, particularly over 65, but even over 50, the risk really starts to go up after the age of 50, mm-hmm. Children, whilst, so just to summarise the issue about children, the risk of infection from the countries where they've done, you know, the blood test, the serology, looks to be lower in children under the age of 10, but it's certainly there in children over 10. So if the grandchildren are in the high school age or older primary school, there's probably a greater risk. Having said that, the studies that have been done have relied on a blood test that looks at whether children have antibodies to the virus. But there's also been some other research that suggests that people who get very mild or, you know, don't get a sort of rip-roaring infection may not actually develop antibodies. So it's possible, though not, we haven't seen enough research on this, there's still a lot of uncertainty, that children, young children under the age of 10, may get very, very mild or asymptomatic infection and not develop antibodies. It doesn't mean they haven't had the infection. Whether they're infectious or not is another question.
Raina, what about public transport? Would you feel safe on public transport?
I would. Public transport is, in terms of public spaces, anything crowded and enclosed is higher risk than being in the open air, right? So if you're on a bus, a train, some kind of building where there's a lot of people congregated inside, those are more high risk, especially if you've got a longish journey, you know, if you're 1 hour on the train or whatever. And that's another situation in which, you know, wearing a mask might be a good idea. Although it's not an official recommendation, the rationale is that people with COVID-19 can be infectious and have no symptoms whatsoever.
Yes.
So you can't tell who around you is infected, right? And those same people could, you know, leave virus behind in the air. So there's been studies of coronaviruses that show that it can come out just from normal breathing into the air.
Gosh.
And it's more likely to be aerosolized than other viruses.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the rationale in the US for having recommended masks in the community, that you don't know who's infectious. And in a city where there's a lot of infection, you know, wearing it probably will prevent someone who is sick and doesn't know they're sick from transmitting it onwards. And that's been shown in a study with seasonal coronaviruses, that it comes out with just breathing, but if you put a mask on, it doesn't come out, the virus, right? But and it may also protect people who are well from breathing in air that's got virus in it. So if you're not, like if it was me, if I had to get on a train, I would certainly put on a mask.
Right. So how real do you think is the chance of a second wave?
Well, I don't like the term second wave. It's more like there could be a resurgence, you know, an increase in cases again. Really depends on what happens with our international borders and with high-risk settings and the surveillance we've got, disease surveillance we've got in Australia. If the international borders remain closed as they are now, the risk should be pretty low. We'll probably have outbreaks like happening in potentially aged care facilities. We've seen, you know, the meat packing plants. Those meat processing factories are very, very high risk. There's been hits of those outbreaks all over the world. So there's something very high risk in those settings. So in those kind of high risk settings, we'll probably continue to see outbreaks. And as long as we identify them very quickly, we can control them and stop them, you know, spreading into the community. And that's where the testing is really important. It's also really important that people go and get tested if they've got symptoms, or if they've been in contact with someone who they think might have had it. But otherwise, if the borders stay closed, the risk, you know, should remain reasonably low. But if we do start opening up the borders, that's when the risk will increase, I think.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much for your time and your words of wisdom. I really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. Bye.
Bye-bye now.